6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually as always by the now with warm feet, Anna Forsyth, 84603. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. It's not the most, you know, complimentary intro you've ever given me, but it is factually accurate. I went and grabbed socks right before we started recording. There are bees on them.
Oh, they're not like fancy socks.
So I don't have very many sensible socks. I used to wear these black glittery socks to work, and my coworkers would say, oh, they're so fun. And I was like, these are the most sensible socks I own. Most of mine have like pugs on, or I have one has a chihuahua on, and I think it says Fiesta. He's wearing a sombrero, you see.
I don't know. Yeah. When I worked for the local family-owned telco, they had a dress code, business cash. And had to wear dress pants, so I wore dress socks. And I always wore polo shirts because I could get away with that. And I wore bright colors. And people would always comment on them. And one day someone's like, for someone who wears such bright colored polo shirts, I'm kind of disappointed you don't wear bright colored socks. So I took that as a personal affront. And I ordered, I think it was a company called Good Laundry. It was launched off at Kickstarter. It was all these like crazy looking socks. They were really good quality. I wore the hell out of them, like to the point that I eventually had to get rid of them because while the socks were still together, they were nothing more than like silk thread on my feet.
Yeah.
But oh, yeah, it was so much personality.
Few of those recently. But yeah, my favorite pair, I've actually lost one of them, which is really sad, but it says broccoli doesn't like you either.
But I like broccoli.
I like baked broccoli, but
I can do both. Steamed, baked.
Can you tell that we don't want to talk about the Canucks?
Well, I had actually sort of worked in my head a segue from socks that have personality to a team that lacks it. However, the broccoli doesn't like you either ties into it. It appears the Canucks may not like us much right now, especially, or if they do,
broccoli Besser showing it. Broccoli Besser doesn't like us or life losing. Yeah. Or losing. We don't like losing either, Brock.
This is still the C4 Canucks playoffs podcast because it has to be this season. But the Vancouver Canucks are sure giving the rest of the division a pretty good head start here right now.
Especially just to after make it look impressive when they stick the landing.
Let's be honest. The season could turn around like Wednesday. And the Canucks could go on a hell of a run. And, you know, I mean, the NHL is set up in such a way that that could almost happen in February and it's still going to be a thing. But this past week hasn't been a good one. I mean, I think back to what we were talking about last show and yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was funny. So last night I saw the first half of the game. So the first period of the Abbey Canucks game and then the first period and a half of the Canucks game. And then I went and saw a comedy show, saw Eddie Izzard live, and she was amazing. But yeah, friend of the show, Annalise, who's just been in the States for the last 5 or 6 days, so she's missed most of the games. And she said, oh, when was the last time we won a game? And I said, a week ago. Like, it really wasn't that long ago that we
felt that way.
Beat the heck out of Dallas, but it's been a tough week. Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, okay. Well, I mean, let's save this. Let's just get ourselves to rewind. When we recorded our show, we were looking ahead and we were like, okay, the Ducks are coming to town. We think the Canucks, you know, should have a chance here. We were like, oh, Colorado, that's going to be a tough one. Vegas, that'll be a tough one. And then we got the Ducks again. And, you know, that game against the Ducks at home wasn't the best of games, but like the Vancouver Canucks we've seen this season, they figured out a way to go and manufacture themselves a point. And not only that, did that despite some adversity where...
like playing against five Anaheim Ducks.
In overtime.
In overtime, which I guess they did lose, but they didn't lose whilst there were five Ducks on the ice.
No, and but also a that tripping penalty.
Yeah.
Like, nonsense. You know, so before we actually get into the games, the Vancouver Canucks have seen some questionable decisions go against them in the past week. I am one who always will say, I don't think the NHL has a conspiracy against the Canucks. I don't think officials have this conspiracy that is totally anti-Canuck. But I can see why people might suggest that that's the case when we see, one, the tripping penalty against Tulak, and then the delay of game against Demko. The Canucks goaltenders are getting zero benefit of the doubt, and neither one of the goaltenders has history. Last week we talked about Anna's vision of Mike Smith being given the opportunity to go and stop games at will, and that's because he's got a history.
But let's be real, Mike Smith aside, goalies do get a rough go of things. Like, trying to get an interference call on a goalie is rough. Like, them trying to get a whistle when they're, like, covering the puck is tough.
True.
So, if there is a pattern, it's that. It's not, you know, anti-Canucks bias. But there is an anti-goalie bias in NHL officiating.
But, you know, recapping the week that has been, the Vancouver Canucks lose in overtime to the Anaheim Ducks, and I think it was twice that Anaheim had had five skaters on the ice in overtime. They had a horrible tripping call against Tulak, and that's where Petey decided he was so angry he scored a shorthanded goal. Nice beauty. And then they hit the road, and you're like, okay, you know what? Adversity, things didn't go your way. Not a problem. And then they get to Denver, and I don't know if it was like acclimation to the reduced O2 in the air or what, but why is Demko in that net as long as he was? And this is not a knock against him, because I think it would have been worse had he not. But two, when you allow the Colorado Avalanche to score at will, it doesn't end well for you.
Yeah, I mean, that game was definitely the worst of the bunch. Like, maybe the game against Anaheim away was, like, the most dispiriting, but, like, the worst performance was definitely in Colorado. Like, it was just lifeless, wasn't it? There was nothing to it.
If someone had told me, Chris, they're already looking ahead to their night on the Strip, I would have believed them. The Vancouver Canucks showed up to simply ensure that they didn't forfeit, at least how it felt to me as the casual fan. Mm-hmm. Losing to 7-1 to Colorado is embarrassing. Losing to Colorado, it's a good team, right? Like,
But I haven't 7-1. Heard of, like, two of the players that scored.
Well, it's the Vancouver Canucks. This is what they do. They empower players that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
But the, you know, Nils Höglander goal in the third period, which, you know, wrecked the shutout, felt more like, you know, this sort of prototypical. It's, you see it in the movies all the time where, you know, baseball pitchers has like thrown a no hitter or something and the coach sends the young kid out. You get up there and you wreck it. That's what it felt like, you know, Höglander went and did. One bright spot on this road trip, Nils Höglander, but not enough. So, stinker, 7-1. Thatcher Demko hung out to dry. And you have to think the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday in Vegas, Hockey Night in Canada, they're going to go and show a much better effort. And you know what? For the better part of two periods, they did.
Yeah, that's it was so gutting because they really just dragged you back into caring.
It was like, okay, JT Miller gets a goal early. Assisted Niels Höglander. Ah, Vancouver Canucks statement. Tanner Pearson, like I think it was like 2 minutes after that. Now they're up 2-0. Okay, Vancouver has really turned things around. So when that late goal in the first period happens, we've seen this story before. The Vancouver Canucks let a goal go in late. Now, okay, sure, power play. But it starts to point out there's a flaw in the Canucks system in that special teams is not a strength of theirs.
Wait, what?
I know. It's
this
crazy,
is brand new information.
Right? But what we then see in the second period, Vegas has settled themselves down. They go and tie it up 5 minutes in. And 5 minutes after that, they take their first lead in the game. Like, it just, at this point, feels like, okay, Vancouver, they're going to lose this, aren't they? But no, Niels Höglander, right spot on the road trip, has different plans, ties it up in the second, gets us to the third, tied up. Early in the third, Jake Lechishin scores a goal. And you know what? Niels is like, ain't nothing tolerating none of that. He scores again to tie it up. So we're like, whoa, man, this is great. Great hockey. Great hockey. And then some penalty trouble befalls the Vancouver Canucks. Vegas gets their power play marker. And then the sort of nail in the proverbial coffin, Dadonov scores. And then Marchessault gets another later on in the third period. She's a done. It's two games where you've given up seven.
Yeah. And just as a funny sidebar, Abbey Canucks won 7-1 in between those two games.
There's a whole lot of sevens. Does that mean that We Are All Canucks number seven is going to be hung in the rafters again?
I mean, it's funny. We talked about when Abbey Canucks got their name that you could sort of use the parent club to sort of trade off that name. But it seems like it might be the other way around. Mm-hmm. But
here we are. Going into Sunday, the Vancouver Canucks need to make a statement. There's no way that you can lose two games by giving up a seven and then put in a poor effort. But the Vancouver Canucks had different plans.
They didn't give up seven.
Okay, true. They didn't. moral victory. And Niels Höglander got them off to a great start, scoring the first goal in the first period. But earlier, when we talked about special teams not being too special, the Vancouver Canucks went to the box. The Ducks scored goals. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for them, the wheels came off that bus after Demko got himself a 2 minute minor for delay of game for knocking the net off the moorings. When I saw it, I'm like, okay, it's a soft call, but you can tell like Demko's going into the post. He's lifting his body up. What I didn't realize is prior to this, the referees had gone and put the net back on the moorings, but had not done so properly. And as a result,
it's so a cool way. You just realize that you messed up them being the refs and then point the finger at somebody else.
Yeah, it was just brutal. And unfortunately, it was that sort of adversity that you could see, like, did the Canucks in. Like, they were done. Sure, there were some opportunities getting into the third period, but empty net goal. Was it an empty net goal that Henrik scored?
So the fourth goal was empty net, the fifth.
Yeah, and then Sam Steele scored
Halak back in. Sam Steele sounds like a male model, like, like in a TV show. I still don't believe that's a real person. But yeah, like, it's kind of easy to see things like the Demko penalty, like the Halak tripping call, as part of some wider narrative because things are going so wrong.
The conspiracy narrative.
Sure, but also just like the everything is going wrong narrative. But like, the reality is, for a good team doing well, or at least doing okay, and with a somewhat decent penalty kill, you can just ride those crappy calls out. But because they have, like, there's legitimate calls against them, and they're just, yeah, the PK is just brutal every single time. It looked a little better with Tyler Mott, like, on it, but he's not a one-man savior of the special teams, you know?
Well, if Tyler Mott was the difference here, that says more about the Canucks as an organization than it does about Tyler Mott. No, we're making it very clear. We're big Mott stands to us.
And Hoglander.
And Hoglander.
I am wearing my Short King Nails shirt because he is the only one that deserves celebrating.
From the podcast that can do merch.
Yeah.
Not us.
We'll do it eventually.
Well, but it, like, do either one of us have artistic skills to whip something like that together? Are we witty? I mean, you are.
But no, I have the, like, the slogans, but I have zero artistic skills. Just ask my mom, who's an artist.
Next episode, Anna's mom with a artist hot take. Speaking of hot takes, though, Vancouver Canucks come home and people are demanding change. So it's interesting to note that the organization has let local media know they're not entirely happy with the negative coverage, thinking that the critical nature of it is harshly unfair. Can you explain to me how a team that goes on the road loses as badly as it does in a fashion that it happens to occur in and is currently off to their worst start in, I think it's like 25 years? How anyone is being harshly critical? Like, they're not in a good place. Is it injuries? Sure, maybe it is. But that's always the issue then. It's always injuries. That's not a good thing. That's like, if you're the head of an organization and you can't weather problems and the problems are consistent, you're obviously not doing enough to mitigate the problems.
Yeah. I mean, a few media members have shared this over the course of the day as well, but it would be so much easier for them if Canucks were better. They do better when Canucks do better. So it is in their interest to skew to the positive, but that's just not the reality.
No. And well, even like, you know, there's always this belief that house radio will talk favorably. House radio is not. House radio is like, we can't go and put lipstick on a pig. Like, it's this is bad. Ian McIntyre on, I think it was it on Sportsnet or was it on Hockey Night Canada? But might have been the end where he had commented, he's like, I think there's a problem. And if I think there's a problem, fans think it's even worse. Or something along those lines.
I mean, that's interesting. It's good that he recognizes that. But yeah, it's been going badly for a while now. And you might hear like media members talk about like when the Canucks look good, they're going to say they look good. But they're also aware of the larger like journey, right? Where the Canucks are headed. And it's been nowhere good for a while.
Let's say hypothetically, the Vancouver Canucks do come home with no points on the road. Let's say they lay an egg against Colorado, but we see a hard-fought game where maybe a hot goaltender sneaks a point or both points out of Vegas, and another hard-fought game where a hot Ducks team, who themselves are currently on a roll, get those points. Yes, it's the same result, but the effort that you saw on the Saturday and Sunday games, you can say, hey, there's potential here. There's opportunity here. We saw none of that. Mm. In fact, if you were to suggest, well, we saw it, Chris. We saw a little bit of that on Saturday. We saw a little bit of that on Sunday. A little bit ain't enough. The moment there was adversity, the wheels fell off the car and it went into the ditch.
Yeah. That's the reality of it. Like, the good teams are tested as well, but they just don't break.
Well, and if they do, they break once. Like, yeah. That's the thing. That stinker against Colorado, even the best teams are going to have just a rough game, like a really rough game. But then what do? They proceed to come out and they attempt to hang a 7 on their next opponent, right? Do you, like, if you consider you have to go and play one of the top teams in the league and they just came off a game like the Canucks did against the Avs, you don't want to play the Canucks. Like, it's like you don't want the really good team to be pissed off. And what we're seeing is Canucks are not a really good team. And if they were pissed off,
I mean,
weird way of showing it.
I did say when my roommate asked what I thought would happen in the Vegas game, I said they're going to start hot and score one or two goals, and then they're going to get backed up again and it won't look good. It's kind of what happened.
Yeah. I just brutal. We'll get into more Canucks talk a little bit later in half full, half empty, but let's look at sort of the Vancouver Canucks a week ahead. So they don't play again until Wednesday, where they get to play the Colorado Avalanche. So I'm looking forward to that game.
I know. I got a few like promo emails from the Canucks off saying that they had tickets available.
Have you seen the ticket picture, like the Ticketmaster?
I mean, it doesn't look good. I did come out with a petty dictionary definition of great when they said they had great seats available. Depends what the great seats looking at, right?
Yeah. It's not looking good. And I'm genuinely curious of those who do go to the game, if it doesn't go well. I'm not trying to awfulize here as much as it sounds like that's the case. I can't imagine the Vancouver Canucks don't show up and play better comparative to what we saw on the road. But if, heaven forbid, it doesn't go well, what will that sound like? Like, the Vancouver Canucks fan base, yes, be critical as you might want to be about them. They care and they're passionate. And that passion is not always positive. And I think it's important to understand that those who would be in the building to express that displeasure can do so like no other.
Yeah, I mean, the noises coming out the organization today when they're sort of almost saying they didn't, like, fan reaction didn't give them the sense that they were unhappy or anything like that. But I think it's just so unfair to put that on live fans who are coming into arena after a year of being out of it and are trying to enjoy themselves the best they can, and then saying, oh, well, they were cheering, you know, we didn't think that they were annoyed.
Oh, well, but I think part of the problem though is that it's this belief that social media amplifies everything. Well, there is truth. Social media does amplify a lot of noise, but those in the building, those are the ones that we listen to most. And you're right. The year that we've not had Vancouver Canucks hockey, there has been this sort of happiness that's just present because I get to go and watch a game. Now, none of these games that we have had fans in the building for have been a 7-1 loss. It would have been interesting to have seen what Canucks fans would have done if we had seen that effort here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. But like, look back at history, the Vancouver Canucks fan base will express displeasure. A GM, whether or not it was right, may have lost his job because of fan reaction in the building.
Yeah.
And I genuinely wonder if those fans, if they could go back in time, would have preferred not to have started the chant they did. Not to say that that's the only reason as to what made the decision happen, but it's interesting to note that decision happened soon after.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, Colorado Wednesday, earlier start 6 PM Pacific because of TV. Friday nights against the Winnipeg Jets, 7 p.m. Pacific, and then on Sunday, a game that I will be at. Right. Chicago Blackhawks are in town, 5 p.m. Pacific. I've said this many times before. I'll say it again. I'm still a little apprehensive. It's not so much about going and watching the Canucks, good, bad, or indifferent. I'd like to go and watch the Canucks. This will be the first event where I'll be around a lot of people I don't know.
Yeah,
and that's fun. Anxiety, right? But one might point out that, hey, things are going the way they are. There might not be all that many people around me. So I haven't actually looked at what tickets.
I'd be curious about it, especially with what's happened to Chicago. Not to Chicago, but they've been involved in recently.
Anywho, I mean, but looking ahead at the schedule here, I have no confidence against Colorado. I think the Jets might take that game. The Canucks might get some points out of Chicago.
Yeah. But, you know, we talked about this before, I think, but we had a 7-game homestand. That's our longest homestand of the season. And wasted it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Is what it is.
Right.
As we transition to our new segment, which I still don't have a drop for because, hey, I got to go and actually make one and two have the time to do so. It's Game Changers. If you recall, Anna went and created a change in the game that she felt would help protect goaltenders. And I had said equated to Mike Smith be given carte blanche to do whatever the heck he wanted. It's my time for a suggestion. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to bring it up again. I love 3-on-3 overtime hockey. I love it. Let's drop the shootout and make it go 10 minutes. And hey, if you were to say, okay, Chris, we can't have ties in hockey. Okay, bring the shootout back after 10 minutes. But I want that game to now be 3 points. I want it to be a 3-point win. And if you get to a shootout, both teams get a point, and it's a bonus point for shootouts.
I don't hate it. And I especially love the 3-2-1 points.
Structure. Oh, I hate that. It's two points unless there's the bonus point. Like
that's not
consistent.
Yeah, exactly. It should be 3-2-1.
Heck, if they want it to be 2 points, okay.
Then you don't get
you took away ties, so 2 points for whatever type of win you get.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think 3-2-1 would be the best scenario. I don't hate it because I love 3-on-3 overtime as well. But 10 minutes is the absolute max I'd want to go. Because
why not? And I'm not suggesting going 3-on-3 in overtime in playoffs.
Yeah, well, see,
okay. I liked the shootout when it was novel. But now I
feel
it's more entertaining to watch 3-on-3 chaos than it is to watch.
That's the thing. Would 3-on-3 hockey remain as chaotic as it is if it went to 10 minutes? Like, that's a long time to be skating out.
Tired players, mistakes get made.
I mean, maybe. I do like the chaotic elements of it. I think I'm not a good measure because I love shootouts more than most people love shootouts. But to me, I think we tried 60 minutes of, 5-on-5, mainly hockey. That didn't work. We couldn't break the tie. Tried 5 minutes of overtime, 3-on-3 hockey. That didn't work. So it's just like, to me, it's like different things you're offering. And I agree with you that playoffs should remain how they are and have the endless overtime because that's fun. Yeah.
I was giving this some thought, but I didn't really want to talk about playoffs. With playoffs, I'm actually of the opinion that maybe they go 4-on-4 in overtime.
Yeah.
Open up the ice a little bit. I'm not suggesting 3-on-3. I like the 5-on-5 overtime. It's just, I feel during the regular season, 3-on-3, 10 minutes, chaotic hockey wins. It's just entertaining. It's crazy experience.
I do like 3-on-3 overtime. So I think it could be fun. Yeah, yep. I'd just be curious to see how it panned out, whether it would end up being as, as exciting as it is right now. And I just wonder, would you see an increase in penalties and then you just go back to 4-on-3 and then it's just a bit dull? Like 4-on-3 in overtime is just I don't know. I don't like it. It makes me feel gross.
I agree, but then do you want to see 3-on-2?
No, I know you can't do that, but I'm just saying
3-on-2 does not work,
and you have to do it, but it's just once that happens, you're kind of we've kind of wasted the magic of it now.
Yeah,
so true. I wonder if that would happen more. So I don't hate it, and I'm definitely signed up. Sign me up for the 3-2-1 point system. Because you have to incentivize people winning in regulation more than you do currently.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree. In fact, you might suggest there were two game changers from Chris, because that's how.
Yeah, you should have saved one.
Changing, I am. Speaking of another game changer, it's time for a break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
You know, this is half full, half empty, but could it be the F word?
Sure.
Because we're going to talk about the Jim Benning era. As you put in your rundown and assessment, we've tweeted out this graphic a few times. I put it together, and it talked about sort of the performance of general managers for the Vancouver Canucks over the years. And I had always talked about how, being the fan that I am, I've been a fan since the 80s, I remember some dark, dark years. Now, if you weren't a fan in the 80s or you just weren't around in the 80s, I completely understand why that might fall short. But if you're around in the 90s and sort of the early 2000s, you probably remember some really tough times there. But then when you look at the performance of the teams during these years, it becomes quite clear that whether it's through the sort of foundation of the league and the structure, how, you know, the old Smythe division had some pretty weak teams, and when four of the five or six make the playoffs,
yeah,
things happen. But the Vancouver Canucks had never really had a period of time where a general manager didn't get their team to the postseason. Their first few seasons from expansion, they didn't make the playoffs. But then pretty much made the playoffs 50% of a general manager's time or more, until the dark year where a certain coach became kind of a GM.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't go well. Then a new GM comes into play, starts making changes, doesn't work out, gets sent on his way. His guy takes over. I mistakenly counted 4 years, completely forgot that one of them was completely locked out. But what is so key about that is originally Dave Nonis in the graphic had four seasons, is what I had said. Playoff was once, so that's 25%. But if you subtract the 1 year that you can't fault him for not making the playoffs, because no one did, 33% success rate, which brings us to Jim Benning. Mm-hmm. Jim is currently on his 8th year as the guy in charge of the Vancouver Canucks. And his teams have made the playoffs less than 33. I want to say it's like 28% of his tenure.
Yeah, because it's 2 out of 7, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, even then, you've got to put an asterisk by one of those.
Sure. I mean,
if we're being generous, we'll just say 2 out of 7.
Okay. Well, so the asterisk would have to be on the one that, like, one of the two.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, this is the crazy thing, is that it's not been good. Now, there are going to be those that say, well, yes, but he took over an entirely different team than any other general manager in the history of the Vancouver Canucks and had to rebuild. I'm sorry, what? Like, Jim Benning is not the only general manager in the history of the Vancouver Canucks to rebuild a team.
Yeah, and, like, don't get me wrong, I get it. Like, they pushed out all out for a cup in 2011. Best team in the league, should have won a cup. Even won the President's Trophy the next year, 2012. So, like, I get that it was a tough spot to take over the team in. Like, I'm giving him generous amount of leverage with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they rebuilt the team and the 2015 making the playoffs was, like, the start of that, like, rebuild coming to fruition, we wouldn't be sitting here right now talking about this. Like, 2 out of 7, if you're at the point, you know, that you've rebuilt, if we were in a good place now and we'd made the playoffs the last 2 years or, you know, something like that, where we were just like, okay, we have this very low playoff success rate, but we are now in a position to push. But we're not at all. We're not close.
Well, and this is the part that I think drives me nuts. The Vancouver Canucks were in a real dark spot when Pat Quinn sort of took over. He was able to go and turn that team around in the 90s. And yes, it was a blue-collar team in 94 that probably had no business going to the final, did. But it created an era of an excitement. And then, you know, yes, the, you know, doldrums occurred. We had a pretty dark period. But then Brian Burke takes over, and we start to see Brian, you know, work his magic and rebuild the team into an exciting team with the West Coast Express and the like. Doesn't quite, you know, work out going his method. Dave Nonis takes over. Unfortunately, doesn't work out well for Dave. And then we get Mike Gillis in play. And there are those that look at Gillis and like, he inherited what Burke and Nonis had built. You know what? I'm willing to concede that what Gillis took over was a roster that had been rebuilt, and that Gillis went in and, you know, benefited from the fruits of all the labor of those in front of him. But the roster that he was given was a roster that needed to make the playoffs, win it all. He went for it. And when it became clear that that was no longer going to be possible, he had actually said, this roster needs to rebuild. I think we can do it the right way. We could probably get it done quick, but it needs to happen. He says those magic words. Fans say magic words in the stands. Out he goes. And who takes over? Jim Benning. And in the 7 years that Jim has been in charge, going into year eight now, what has he been doing? Well, he was retooling. And there are those that might say, well, that was Trevor's plan. Can't fault Jim for Trevor. Trevor's the guy in the way. Jim just has to execute on Trevor's vision. Not going to lie, if that was truly the case, Jim's not the guy in charge today, because Trevor would have gone and found someone else to execute his vision. It was much more intricate than that. In fact, as it, you know, rumor has it, Trevor had suggested that the team needed to blow itself up and rebuild. Mm-hmm. And Jim had said, no. And guess who's in charge?
Yeah. And guess, look where we are now. Like, if we'd have, I'm not saying, like, who knows where we'd be if we pushed ahead with Trevor's vision of the team, but I just like our chances a little better than now. Well, like, you can't, yeah.
Like, where are the Canucks today? Like, if we think about sort of their roster, there's this young core, and I actually would agree, the core itself, this young core, is a good core to have. I'm excited by this core. What really doesn't excite me is all of the accompanying pieces that have been wrapped around this core. And therein lay the problem, because these pieces are now limiting what you're able to do with this core. That window in turn will start to close if it hasn't closed already. And where does the Vancouver Canucks team find themselves? Not in a position to go and then knock it out in the park. Like, if we're talking in 2 years' time, Jim's had 2 years for like 5 years.
Yeah. I would say that even the young core, which is the strong one, like, they're all on their second contracts. Like, we had 3 years of Patterson and Hughes on ELC. And true, he made the playoffs once, thanks to COVID. But you can't just, that just needs to be like the stepping stone, and then you build around that. You don't start building around that 5 years into them, like, as a team.
No, like, you're right. You take advantage of the situation,
and you invest whilst you have the cap space, thanks to ELC. Like, I will give a quick shout out to Drancer, who did a very good summary in the Armies from the Ducks game, but basically said, you know, that the ownership went into penny pinching mode when the pandemic hit, and all the sort of good value contracts, like, that we can look at now, you know, Tyler Toffoli, they didn't want to pay it.
But that's the thing. Like, as much as ownership might not want to pay Tyler Toffoli money, Tyler Toffoli money was given to others.
Yeah, exactly. And look at the contracts they did invest in, like Holtby. He's been bought out. Jake Virtanen, he bought out. yeah, his contract renewed. He was bought out. Obviously, there's extraneous circumstances to that, but let's be real. Like, Jake Virtanen shouldn't have been renewed, like, to begin with. So,
well, so we've talked about it on the show. What's not to have said that the Vancouver Canucks just let Jake hit free agency and then bring him back? Like, they did that to Troy Stetcher, and I'd say Troy Stetcher, you know, on the market, unfortunately, didn't really work out well for him. But he sort of, from the sounds of things, presumed the Vancouver Canucks were going to do just that, and then they didn't. Like, it was just, it was so weird how things were managed. And you're right, you know, what Johnston said about penny pinching might have been part of the problem. But that's ownership making bad decisions and having a leader in place that does not have the skills to work around your bad decisions because they have made many bad decisions themselves.
Yeah. And it's just like you're letting good value leadership walk in, you know, like Chris Tanev. Like, I mean, his contract was locked, don't get me wrong. But then if you're just reinvesting that money in expensive veterans, just like, because you have this idea of wanting to replace toughness and leadership and experience, and then that's not what you need to invest in. You need, like, better, younger pieces.
Well, the funny thing about this is you and I both had said Jim was actually having a good offseason that year. He didn't give Markstrom the money that Calgary did. He didn't give Tanev the money that Calgary did. But for every one of these deals where Jim was smart, there was also Jim wasn't so smart.
Yeah, I mean, and literally his biggest win of the last few years was not signing OEL. And then he did sign OEL. And let's be honest, OEL's impressed so far this year, like compared
to... In the short term.
Very short term. But definitely better than I think either one of us predicted. But this is a lot of money.
Let's say Jim doesn't get OEL this year, right? Let's say we still have these anchors of contracts on the books. Canucks fans had kind of accepted, okay, yeah, it's not good. We're not really happy you're running this back. But you know what? Oh, my goodness. Look at the freedom and flexibility this team is going to have going into the next season. And they'll have these young kids that they'll be getting on to sort of, yes, some greater deals, but they have the room to work with. And instead, it's like, you know, cap mismanagement long-term, next GM's problem. And it's scary because as a fan, the next GM that takes over for Jim, presuming the Vancouver Canucks don't make the playoffs this season and win the Stanley Cup, which is what we are too both fully behind and invested in. I don't know how the next GM fixes this without blowing it up.
That's the thing. It's difficult. Like, honestly, as you said, like, if we didn't sign OEL, if we still had Louis and, I mean, don't go wrong, like, Arizona are doing even worse than the Canucks, if possible. We wouldn't have gone Garland, who's been, again, one of the few bright spots, but you would just think, okay, this is coming to the end of an era. Like, we've got one more year of these contracts, and either Jim Benning has a really good plan as how to get us out of it, or he's gone.
Yeah.
And well, next year looks a little brighter. But
so here we are today after a real rough road trip where there's belief and, I mean, maybe some smoke too, that the room has been lost so that the coach is not getting the buy-in that he should. There are some that believe Greener needs to be the one that sent his way to turn things around. I honestly don't see how you give Jim another coach. And if you do give him another coach, it's one you already have. Like I had mentioned in like C4 Discord, if Travis Green gets blocked, Baumgartner takes over the team. That's I don't see any other way.
The thing is, right, yeah, like I don't see it. I don't necessarily agree with you, even though I think that putting another coach into the situation is not giving, like, putting them in a position to succeed.
Well, like if Greener's gone, are you suggesting the Vancouver Canucks go and find another, like another coach?
Yeah, I think they would, because I think point of blowing outside up mid season is to turn it around. And I don't see how that would change things, keeping a much maligned coach like Baumgartner in a job.
No, no, but like if I'm okay, first of all, that would mean like if Jim is given another coach, right? That has to mean Jim's got leverage in some way, shape, or form, right? Like he, as owners, if you allow your GM to bring in another coach now, no coach is going to sign just a contract through the end of the season.
Oh yeah, for right? sure.
They're gonna want something more than that. And so if you're planning to get rid of your GM, you have to expect the next one's going to want to have the card of I want my own people, mm-hmm. right? Like I just feel that from an ownership perspective, you don't give this GM another opportunity to bring in another coach and another contract. This is going to cost you money in the long run. That's why I think Bomber takes over. Now, if, however, a new coach gets brought in, what would that coach want? Because I can't imagine, like, even coaches who might be on a redemption arc would stay away from the Vancouver Canucks. And I would hope they would stay away from them, but you know what I mean? Like,
no, I know what you mean. I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down. The only thing I would say is that, one, I think coaches always want a job, even on teams that look super bleak. But you'll always find a coach. But it's a tough one because I don't see why you blow up, like, what you fire your coach like not even halfway into the season to replace him with his one of his assistants. Like we've seen
better teams do it.
I just don't see what that achieves that the ownership would want to achieve. But I do see what you're saying, like you're either putting a coach on a pretty short term contract, obviously not till the end of the season, you would have to give him more than that, but you would try and get it down to a pretty short contract if you need another GM to come in. Yeah. But yeah, I just don't see like they're only going to do it under extreme pressure from the public, right?
Well, and that's key because like I talked about this in CBR Discord where the conversation is like, you know, is Jim going to find his walking papers? The only way Jim, I feel, finds his walking papers is if the Vancouver Canucks throw up some stinkers and the fans just make their displeasure so significantly known that ownership reacts on the emotional basis of we're going to go and acquiesce to their demands. But at this point, I feel that the team, the organization, the front office that you see today is the one that's going to be here throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, maybe.
Until such time as the Vancouver Canucks, if heaven forbid, become officially eliminated.
Yeah, because I just don't see what would the point be of firing Jim and keeping Baumgartner on. Like, in terms of the fan base, I don't think they view it particularly positively.
No. But see, this is the thing is that if you're going to save the season, the coaching change is the one sort of move you can make that has the most significant impact with the least significant hit to your organization. Yeah,
it's just, I don't
see that. If you don't want to bring in a new contract, that's why I say Bomber. It's like if they got rid of Jim tomorrow, I honestly think Ryan Johnson comes in as a caretaker GM to allow for them to then make a decision in the offseason. And the
Sedin's in charge of Abby.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been pretty involved so far, as far as I can tell.
Well, not according to Caleb, who feels the Sedin's just haven't been pulling their weight around.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would say is that I think Obama has a pretty significant impact on the team already. Like, I don't think him in charge would save anything.
It's the coach. It's not the person who takes over. It's the person who's now departed. It's the change.
Right.
It's Travis, you're out of a job because we needed to go and let someone go. Like, I don't necessarily feel that Travis Green is necessarily the problem.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know if he's the solution that will eventually be in place. I feel that there's a bigger problem at play. Like, I mean, hell, let's be honest. I have been very clearly not in the Jim Benning camp for many, many, many years. And when Jim got the job over Gilman, I expressed my displeasure, but that's just the way it has been. I don't understand how the Vancouver Canucks could make a coaching change and think, we fixed it. It's not it. And the problem is the way NHL players perform, a coaching change will get an immediate bump. It will happen.
Oh, yeah. Dead cat bounce. for sure. Yeah, I think we're not like, we've been pretty pro Travis Green, I would say, over the years, but I'm not necessarily fully invested in him as a long-term coach at all. I would have liked to have seen him under a different GM, maybe a couple of years ago, and see where he would be now. But
yeah, that ship has sailed.
That ship has sailed.
No way, another GM comes in and keeps Green. Yeah. Speaking of ships that sail, our former host Clay Emo had himself his own a watch party, and I understand you went and got a picture with Clay. Who?
Yeah. Always nice to meet the fans, as I said on Twitter. It was fun. It was, as anyone around Vancouver knows, it was awful, awful weather. And it was literally at the furthest reach of the West End before you hit the ocean. So it wasn't exactly easy to get to, but yeah, it was good fun. There was a good energy. It was kind of nice to be in a room that, like, without the sort of stress and heightened atmosphere of a game, but like people were into it. And honestly, again, as people in Vancouver know, going to a bar where they're playing the Canucks game with sound isn't always that easy to find, but it was good fun. There was some giveaways. I didn't win anything. I know. I thought he would rig it so I would win, but sadly not the case.
Clay's such a jerk.
He is. We know this. And then there was a live stream afterwards of his vlog, which was honestly weird. I'm not going to lie. It was weird. I think he was just trying it out, and it sort of worked. Sort of didn't.
I was going to say, I applaud him in his third live stream. Like, he, you know, his thing is from his car. Like, that's his big sort of YouTube thing. He's now got his full setup in his home and all that. And I like that he gave it a shot. Like, I've kicked around the idea of us doing a quote unquote live show, both live in person and live virtually. I'm just not entirely sure we could execute the virtual as well. And it's not the same if it was audio. Like, my space has been in the audio side. I've sort of dabbled in the video, but
yeah.
But I would be lying if I were to say I haven't kicked around the idea. So for him to look to try that.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, definitely. I think it was just like the tension of being present in the room and present online, and then trying to have live guests from the room and respond to, like, you know, commenters, which, and to be fair, like, obviously we've done live streams where we do that, but I think you kind of have to choose whether you're making a podcast that's live streamed or you're like interacting with it in a way. I don't know.
True.
But honestly, overall fun experience. I'm glad I went, even though the result wasn't what we wanted. Yeah.
But it did give me thought to consider, and I know I've said this many shows now, we should probably try to put on our own C4 a live show. It'll be New Year.
Yes.
It's not going to happen between now and the end of 2021. It'll be into 2022. We'll see what we can put together, and it's just there. It's not like, hey venue, let's have us. It's, hey venue, what are the logistics in having us in a way that allow for the experience to be in such a way that it conforms within pandemic guidelines and such.
Exactly.
There's more complexity to it, but it's definitely something we'll look to revisit. Speaking of things we can revisit, we got a review, Anna.
We did. In a while,
but we got a review, and it is one of the best reviews we've had in a long while. Why? Because it's titled "Podcast Sucks," 5 stars, which is, if I recall, Anna, it's what we've been asking for quite some time.
I know. Someone finally took the bait. You know, a good friend I mentioned, Ian. He understood the assignment.
He did. And what Ian went on to say is, despite the title of the review, I love this podcast. Chris and Anna are great hosts. Damn straight we are. And they help me keep up to date, or it says, help keep me up to date on a lot of Canucks and NHL news. It's especially great when they go off the rails and talk about whatever they want to. This is my favorite Canucks-focused podcast. And as they like to say, it's the best mediocre Canucks podcast, which is also true. I think I've said this before. We're not the best mediocre podcast unless you tell us so.
Yeah.
Ian has said as much.
Honestly, that was an awesome review. Thank you for that review. Obviously sad that Chris didn't read it out in an accent, but, you know.
Okay. We've had this conversation. I can't do accents. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not gifted like that.
I will do
like
the
that.
Next review in an accent. And then that'll buy you some time and hopefully buy you some confidence to try one.
Well, no, like I just accents and me don't work. Like,
but I'm committing to reading the next review in an accent.
Okay.
I'm doing it.
As you, is it not fair to say that you just read a review and I could say that's an accent?
Yeah, I know. It's always funny that people say, oh, you have an accent. It's like, well, so do you.
So there, I did. I just read it in Chris accent, which is actually how I replied. I'm like, if that accent is mine, then sure. But as far as reading reviews is concerned, Anna, it does raise a good point. We will read it verbatim. She will read it in an accent. And as the rule is, Podcast Sucks 5 Stars is a great title. If you want to be original, Podcast Still Sucks 5 Stars.
Yeah.
Sucky Podcast Keeps Sucking 5 Stars. I mean, I'm giving away the material for free here. You just need to go and add a few sentences or what have you, and we'll read it all out.
Yeah. I mean, great review. Clearly, Ian likes us going off the rails, and we did a whole bunch at the top of the show. So
that's right, where we talked about socks. Mm-hmm. you can also, if you want, drop us a note through the C4 text line, 604-200-6201. That's 604-200-6201. Drop us a text message, drop us a voicemail. If you drop a text, I or Anna read it. If you drop a voicemail, we all get to listen to you. I have said this before, I will say it again. There's probably few things we won't say or play. So be creative, have fun.
And if you want to do an accent in your voicemail, there we go. Or you could just have an accent, you know. One of our Australian listeners, for example.
Genuinely surprised that Wyatt or Jordan haven't gone and dropped a voicemail to advertise Trust the Process or something like that.
Or just
and further the blood feud.
Yeah, I was going to say they would drop a just hate comment.
It's because those two are horrible people.
That's true.
They know what they did.
Hateful.
But yeah, here we are at the end of another show, one of which the Vancouver Canucks had allowed for us to, you know, still remain somewhat bastions of positivity in the fact that we think we'll make the playoffs because it's the only opportunity we have to hope for. But hot damn, I hope things turn around by the time we record our episode in a week's time, Anna.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I would say before you ask me my final thoughts, they are these. It has to either stop raining or the Canucks need to win. And honestly, at this point, I just don't care which. But one of them needs to happen.
Were those your final thoughts?
That's it. That's all I have.
Gotcha. Because that means you stole mine. Thanks.
That's why I jumped in.
No. my final thoughts. Please give Thatcher Demko a better effort. Heck, Halak has been great too. It would be nice if the Vancouver Canucks could produce some offense to support the hot goaltending they're getting. Like, when you lose 7-1 and your goaltender's not the problem, there are big question marks that you need to go and present to yourself and resolve before you go and play again. So please, please give them the support that they need. Unless you're Hoaglander, you're doing a good job, kid. If you have some thoughts about the show and you don't want to leave a review, but you want to let us know all about them, the easiest way to go about it is follow us on social media at the C4 Podcast, facebook.com/C4Podcast, or alternatively drop into C4 Discord, discord.io/C4Podcast. Lots of conversations going on right now about the performance of the Vancouver Canucks and whether or not there's going to be changes in the next week. As I said on this show, I don't think there will be, but having said that now, who knows, maybe I've cursed myself. But on behalf of Anna E4 Size 03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, signing off with those magical words of we out.